Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. A lot of adults are lonely. When we're young and in school, we're surrounded by our peers. We're almost forced into social situations. And that's when a lot of us make lifelong friends. After school ends, things can get a lot harder. Moving to a new town, state, or country for a new job, getting a divorce, other things can put us back at zero. We have to make connections, build community, and start all over again. It can be really hard, even impossible for some people. And making a friend, a real friend, can feel like winning the lottery. Katie Pikus is our Western Iowa reporter here at Iowa Public Radio. She has already uprooted herself and moved across the country twice. And here's how she met one of her best friends.
I actually met my closest friend in a car accident. It was pouring rain outside, and I needed to go inside to call AAA, and my phone wasn't working because the rain had already kind of poured on it when I was standing outside trying to dial. I walked inside to the closest building, and I walked up to this guy who was just kind of sitting in this building on campus, and I said, "Excuse me, can I use your phone? I was just in a car accident." He let me use his phone, and he was willing to wait with me. The guy offered me a ride home. From there, I just became really, really good friends with him and his roommates. The friendship has continued ever since I left Utah, all because of this really, really random car accident that kind of put everything into place.
That's IPR's Katie Pikus. And this hour, we're talking about making friends as an adult. Now, getting into a car accident is not the recommended way to make friends, but we will get tips from experts this hour. We'll also talk about organizations designed to foster friendships. And most importantly, we want to hear from you. What creative ways have you found to make those connections, to make new friends? Or what hasn't worked for you? What has been frustrating? Are you at a new stage of life and finding making friends to be even more difficult? We want to hear your story. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And my first guest today is Julia Furlan. She is the host of the NPR Life Kit podcast, How to Make Friends, three different episodes giving us some advice on how to make these connections. Hello, Julia.
Hello. How are you, Charity?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today. And I'm curious, what was it that you were hearing, experiencing, or seeing that made you think that this was a topic you really needed to dig into?
I feel like I have been a little bit lucky in that, like, my personality has made it so that I feel like I walk through the world and I'm like, oh, look, a new friend. And I heard that the show wanted to talk about making friends. And I sort of like marched up to the senior producer, Megan Kane, in the bathroom. I like accosted her and was like, hi, I would like to do a series on making new friends. I'm Julia. Do you want to do that? And she was basically, you know, she was stuck. So she said yes.
All right. So as you started to explore the subject, I mean, you had your life experience and,
right,
you know, you could also talk to your friends about it. Mm-hmm. But how did you start finding out about how people were experiencing this kind of loneliness, this difficulty making connections in different parts of life?
I think that the first thing that I realized is that everyone wants to talk about their friends, because as I said that I was doing this sort of series, everyone that I spoke to at the coffee machine and moving through the world, everyone was like, oh, I need this. Making friends is so hard. And everybody, it's one of those topics that everybody has a lot of opinions about and everybody has a lot of experience with, because we're in the world, you know, like we're doing this from the time we're little. But people don't always address it explicitly. And the second thing that I realized is that most stories about friendship are actually stories about loneliness. And that sounds kind of dark and sad, but it's ultimately combating loneliness is like the best way to combat loneliness is to have a new relationship or a new friend. So I think that I basically just like started talking to everyone in my life and doing like a lot of, you know, like any reporter, like deep Google searches through like multiple articles where it feels like you're like going through the wormhole. And then I spoke to a lot of experts, psychologists, researchers. There's actually a lot of like friendship literature out there. So I basically just scoured the entire world and tried to find the best information for the show.
All right. Well, Julia, you're going to stay with us. We do have an expert with us as well. Zlatan Krijan is a professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Hello, Zlatan.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you so much for being here today. And I want to talk with you first about the importance of friendship. I mean, we are social creatures. We are always making these connections. What kind of need does this friendship fill in our lives?
Well, psychologists often refer to a need to belong, which just really refers to the fundamental role that social relationships play in our life. It's hard to imagine what it means to be a human being and to be alone. So friends are certainly a key part of that, of the tapestry.
When we make friendship connections, so many of the things that we end up saying about our friends make it sound similar to how we make intimate connections or romantic connections. Can you do a little compare and contrast for me about how these relationships differ?
Absolutely. So, I mean, the good place to start is to realize that what the term friend refers to can be quite varied. A romantic partner or a wife or a dating partner, we have a pretty good sense, and although there are obviously a variety of arrangements there, there is sort of a specific role. Friends occupy a much more broader niche, everything from kind of very intimate friends and confidants to acquaintances to co-workers to friends with benefits. So in psychological research, often when you study these things, it's kind of difficult to nail down what is the aspect of a relationship that you're trying to understand, especially as friends play a very different role in, for example, lives of people who are married and those who are not.
Right. And we have so many different categories of friends as well. I mean, sometimes we can be surrounded by people in a social situation, and that looks like we're having a lot of social interactions, but people can actually feel very lonely even in a situation like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are things on the surface, and obviously a lot of people try to establish connections with others. We're certainly taught to be polite and to play well with others, as you hear in kindergarten. And for some people, there's definitely a lot of trying to do that. But if you don't feel that these things are being reciprocated, it's kind of tough. One process that seems to be critical in developing an intimate relationship, this definitely applies to friends as romantic partners as well, is, you know, mutual self-disclosure, right? So the way we get intimate with one another is I tell you something about me that's at least somewhat private. We're not quite small talk, and then you reciprocate by revealing something about yourself. And to the extent that kind of tit-for-tat process goes smoothly, right, we feel like we're getting closer to somebody, right? We're learning something about them that's sort of unique. We're making ourselves vulnerable to one another. Now, of course, if that process is asymmetric and one person is spilling their guts to another person that doesn't care, that can be a problem as well as fodder of comedy.
All right. So mutual vulnerability is key to a lot of these relationships. And Julia, as you were trying to put together this guide for how to make friends, how did you define friends? Because as I just said, you know, we interact with people in a lot of different ways. What did you call friendship?
I think that I was trying to be as broad as possible to, like, you know, open as many doors as possible so that everybody could walk into the episodes and hear what they needed to hear. But I will say that this concept of vulnerability is absolutely fundamental. One of the experts that I found is this woman named Shasta Nelson, who has a book called Frentimacy, and she talks about a triangle. If you imagine an equilateral triangle where the base is positivity and then the two other arms are consistency and vulnerability, that is the sort of key to, it's an easy visual for friendship where, you know, positivity doesn't mean that you like have to be positive all the time, but that you come away with a positive feeling the majority of time with your friends. And then the two arms are consistency and vulnerability, and that those, that like seeing somebody consistently and being vulnerable with them, it sort of like increases at the same rate. That is sort of the way to imagine the growth of a friendship. But of course, there's also like, you know, what is called weak ties, which are like the people that you see throughout your day who might not be your friends, but they are acquaintances or people that you know and recognize. You know, like Mr. Rogers said, like the people in your neighborhood.
Right. And that kind of social interaction is important, too. But when you were talking to people who were saying, I have a hard time making friends. I mean, it was that deeper connection that they were looking for, right?
Right, right. I mean, I think that we're trying to figure out that feeling that you have when you're with somebody that you're like, oh, this is somebody who understands me. This is somebody who is listening to me, who is accepting me for who I am. That's your friend. That's not your barista, you know? I mean, maybe your barista does that to you, too. I don't know. But, you know, the deeper thing is what I was trying to go for.
And when we're kids, it's easy to make friends, at least for most of us. I realize some people really struggle with that as children, too, and I don't want to minimize that. But kids tend to connect in an easier way because they're kids. So, you know, as adults, right, we're looking for mutual interests, shared values, and things that are harder to find, right? Julia?
Right. Absolutely. I think that, you know, kids will turn to one another and be like, hey, you want to be my friend? And that is like something that I have done multiple times, basically. Just turn to somebody and be like, let's be friends. And I think it sort of catches people off guard because we don't really use that language as adults as often as I think we could. Because it's disarming and it doesn't feel threatening. It's just a simple offer for friendship. I was going to say that the other thing is trying to move from a weaker tie to a more consistent friendship can involve, you know, shared desires, shared activities. That can be a really good way to start the process of being a friend.
All right. And we'll explore that a little more after a break. We're talking about making friends as adults this hour, and you are welcome to join the conversation. 866-780-9100. With me, Julia Furlan, host of the NPR Life Kit podcast, How to Make Friends, and Zlatan Krijan, professor of psychology at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. Nice warm bed. You just remember what your old past said. Boy, you got a friend in me.
Yeah, you got a friend in me. Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. Spectators can find event info such as start times, race routes, and where to watch, as well as volunteer opportunities at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about how to make friends as adults. A lot of people feel lonely and have a hard time making those connections, especially when they need to move to a new place and start over. Maybe it's for a job. Some people lose friends through life events like divorce and need to start over again and again. It's challenging, and some people feel like it's getting more challenging in our digital age. This hour, we're getting some advice and insight from experts. Zlatan Krijan is here, professor of psychology at Iowa State University, and Julia Furlan, the host of the NPR Life Kit podcast, How to Make Friends. And people are getting really creative about how to make friends. Some different organizations have cropped up to help people make these connections, and one of those organizations is in North Liberty. Jillian Miller is on the line with us now, and she is with a program called Placemates, which helps people connect through potluck dinners. Hi, Jillian.
Hi, how are you?
Great. So tell me about Placemates. Tell me about the idea behind it.
Yeah, so this program really ties into exactly what Julia was just saying before the break on turning to someone and saying, let's be friends, and how some people find that really awkward. And so Placemates is created. I am the community engagement coordinator with the City of North Liberty, actually, and in the communications department. And I had just heard from several folks, even with my title, had gotten some emails from people, hey, how do I meet people in the area? You're community engagement coordinator. Is that part of your role? said, oh, not really. But then I kind of thought about what we could do. And we created Placemates, actually, and it launched in the spring this past year. And we are all about meeting new people over good food and good conversation by having a questionnaire on our website that allows people to sign up for a particular event. Our first one was back in June, and our next one is coming up in November, where they fill out a questionnaire, whether they're interested in hosting an event, attending an event, how many people they're looking for, whether they want it to be adults, children welcome or not, what life stage they're in, what life stage they're looking to connect with. And we match folks based on that questionnaire to the best of our ability for potlucks that are then in homes of hosts that have signed up. And it really runs itself at that point. But we had a successful pilot event in June, and people appreciated us making that adult or even family connection easier and take away that awkwardness of maybe setting up the first date.
How was the response? I mean, how many people signed up that first time around?
So the first time we opened up, we announced it in April with our first event in June, and we had 65 households sign up.
Wow.
For the first one, and it was a really good spread across the board of some empty nesters, some people that are maybe just dating, some single folks, some engaged folks, some people with newborns or toddlers, people with teenagers. And so we had 14 potlucks. And they all took place the same night at the same time. Those 65 households were distributed into those 14 potlucks based on their answers. And it was really fun to see pictures come back. Our post-event survey results were really strong. And while it certainly takes, as you guys have been talking about, more than just one interaction to become a friend instead of an acquaintance, we've certainly encouraged that, you know, they're sharing their contact information, and that some people might set up further dates because now they feel like they're expected to, or mm-hmm. that's not weird to ask.
Right.
At
the
that
ice,
event
the
to,
ice has been broken.
Again.
Yeah. So yes, you've got your next about. Event coming up in November. Is this one going to be even bigger? People can still sign up too, right?
Yeah. We're taking registration through the end of this Sunday night. So, It could be. Right now, we're tracking more similar size. I don't think we'll be bigger, and that is difficult to tell why exactly. We are in a school year now instead of in the summer. We are trying a Sunday night instead of our last event was on a Thursday night. So we're trying a few different things, try to find the exact right fit for this. But we've had a lot of repeat people sign up that enjoyed the experience the first time. It's pretty split right now, half on half, on new participants and returning. So we're looking forward to it. And, you know, even if one connection comes out of it, if someone in the community, because we certainly ask that in the questionnaire, how connected are you feeling to your community right now? And then asking that on some post-event surveys as well. We want people to make those connections and just feel like whether they have another date, you'd say, with this person, or if they just see them at the grocery store and just feel like they have another familiar face in the community, that's a win for us.
Did you hear from people who actually formed friendships out of the first event?
You know, I introduce the matches via email and include a short bio that they've all provided about themselves in the questionnaire. And a few of those groups will keep me on the emails and a few won't. But of the ones I saw after the event, I mean, many shared their photo, you know, with me, which you can see those photos. We actually have a page on the North Liberty, Iowa's website, our city website, for Placemates. So you could see some of the photos and testimonials of how our program has gone so far and see that questionnaire that we have. But some people left us on the email and might say it was like a week after the first event that the group started talking again on, hey, does anyone want to go down to Arts Fest together? And they started talking about maybe meeting up at Arts Festival the next week. So I don't know all of the follow-up, but the people that were re-signing up or that I've run into in the community were eager to do it again. So.
Well, Jillian, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jillian Miller is Community Engagement Coordinator with the City of North Liberty. She was talking about their Placemates program, which connects people to have potlucks. And Julia, you talked to people about some other creative ways to make connections. Maybe potlucks aren't quite as popular in Washington, D.C. as they are in Iowa, but a lot of people are using social media and technology to try to connect, right? Oh, Julie, are you still there?
Oh, yes, I'm here. I'm here. I wasn't sure. I couldn't hear you for a second. Yes, people, you are using, you know, social media is sometimes it's an evil thing that we have to live with. But there are lots of ways that people are connecting. I love this idea of placemates. I love the idea of a potluck that's like in real life. But, you know, there's Tinder actually has a wing of it that is friendship based. There's also meetup.com, which is another way to meet people. And there's also I was doing research for another Life Kit series that I'm doing. And one of the things that I'm doing is about book clubs. And one person suggested having a book club that is actually about making new friends, so that you have a book club with your, like, you know, a small group of friends. And the objective is that each person brings a new person to the book club every month, so that you expand your friend group in a quicker way, which I thought was like a really good idea.
It is clever. And a lot of people, book clubs are something I asked people about, things that they've done to be able to make friends and to make connections. Book clubs came up quite a lot. One of the people who responded to me said, I'm great at social interactions, but not so good at getting my friends to actually read the book. So fake, she said, fake book club meets once a month.
Which I love that.
It is good. I mean, you have to have, or at least we feel like we have to have an excuse to get together to see each other in real life.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that's all you need, really. Like, sometimes I think having some kind of pretext. Also, I think that a book club has this, but many other things have it, where it's a regularity. And I think that one takeaway that I came to in my reporting was that, like, you can't just do something once and expect that to be your sort of like friendship setup. You have to keep trying and sort of make a habit out of it for at least, I would say like try it 4 times, 5 times, 6 times, once a week if you can, so that you're, you know, making friends and making, you know, like you're showing your face in the same place again and again. I think that that regularity thing is really hard. It's just like, you know, when you have to go to the gym, it's like creating any other habit. If you want to make friends, you got to create a habit out of it.
Zlatan?
The potluck really raises interesting issues. So we do have more ways to sort of connect with others than we ever had before because of all the internet and social media, etc. But there are also sort of problems that come with that. So we learned this, for example, about dating, contrasting how these things work face-to-face versus online. And because of this choice, and because now we're sort of picking on attributes, right, and you have all this information up front about somebody, I don't know, pictures and, you know, age and what the likes and dislikes, etc., and you're always running your own theories, right?
Right.
Now, of course, the older you are, you have sort of more requirements and more baggage. You're more suspicious. you can contrast that with, you know, children we talked about earlier, where there is most children are not trying to make friends. They're just playing.
Right.
And you make friends in a process, some with more difficulty, of course. And that dynamic seems to me gets progressively lost, right? As you age, because relationships become more scripted, you don't have necessarily opportunities for that consistency that we just talked about, right? Because if you have that consistent, then things sort of naturally develop. If you can get close to somebody, if you don't get very close, but for a lot of us, you kind of need to make a plan. You need to add it to your schedule. I mean, that already takes out some spontaneity and makes you do this calculus. Is this worth my time? Is this worth my effort? And so the potluck is great, I think, first because it's face-to-face, and the excuse is important, but I think it should be more than an excuse. I think the more you have a common experience and something that's unique, that really ties the two people or a group of people to one another more so than to everyone else, And this can be small things, I think, that creates an environment where people step out of their roles and are more willing to make themselves vulnerable in this way to make a new friend.
That's interesting. A lot of people who responded to me said that they felt like volunteering was the best thing that they could do to make friends, that they pointed to different groups that they had volunteered with over the years and the friendships that they had made through those groups. Several of my close friends came from my volunteer work with Girls on the Run, and they also said the same thing, that they had made all of these friends through that. And that's an interesting thing, because volunteering, earlier, Julia, we were talking about people looking for shared values. Yeah. When you volunteer for an organization, that's kind of a shortcut to communicating a shared value, right?
Absolutely. I think volunteering can be a wonderful way to sort of, you know, cut through the noise and find people, often people who are outside of your current friend group or age group or life stage, to work towards a common goal. I mean, volunteering for those of us who are super, like, working hard, trying to find time to volunteer can be really difficult. But I do think that it if you show up to the same place and are, like, living your values in that particular way, that already sort of clears the way for some amount of vulnerability, right? I like that.
And Zlatan, as we get older, do you feel like, I mean, obviously our lives change, so it makes it harder to make friends that way. But are we also bringing with us other baggage that makes it harder to make friends as we age?
I think we do. First, if you're lucky, you already have some what now you start calling old friends, right?
Right.
And those people do, you know, start to play more and more important role, because they're just, as time goes by, and bigger part of your life. Somebody who's known you from elementary school that you've had at least somewhat regular contact with, for example. New people, new friends can be hard to come by. Now, in generally, what you see, older individuals have fewer friends overall. It depends, obviously, how you count these things. But value a smaller number of relationships more, right? And sort of have deeper relationships. Now, that's a general trend with a lot of exceptions. But because of the aging populations, the role of friendship in our health and well-being, mortality even, is being increasingly examined. Even though there is a friendship literature, it's surprisingly small if you think how long psychology has been around, and partly because romantic relationships and marriage has been such a fundamental focus of psychology studying relationships, and friendships have kind of always been in the background. But that's changing with marriage rates declining, with the types of relationships that people have, and the pattern of social support that they rely on is changing. So the role of friends is just going to become more important, especially in the aging population.
Right. I think that I think that there's one thing that I picked up in my research that I really enjoy, that I feel like maybe people can take home, is that, like, making friends outside of your life stage, so, like, older folks being friends with folks who are younger, or people who have kids being friends with empty nesters, like the kinds of things that you don't always see in the United States, at least, are friends that sort of bridge several decades. And I would love to make a plug for that happening more and more. I think we sometimes get stuck thinking, like, oh, if I want a friend, the friend has to have X, Y, and Z similar things to me. But I do think that reaching beyond your current social circle, your race and ethnicity group, like reaching beyond the friends that you necessarily had growing up, can be a really good way to expand your friend circle and meet people that, have a different perspective, but shared values or shared interests.
It gets down to that you can't know if you like someone until you spend some time with them. So it does get sort of a chicken and the egg problem,
yeah,
right? So people,
yeah,
you're not willing to invest more unless you sort of sufficiently like someone or think you could like them, right? But
right,
that's never going to develop, right, if you don't have some of the constancy and
yeah.
I also wanted to make a plug for another kind of experience now as a sort of musician. I'd be biased, but volunteering, obviously, this kind of shortcut, knowing you have some shared values. But I think artistic experience is really important here. So that's a way, for example, where people get close, or even, let's say, with strangers at a concert. There's something that's basically outside of your role, right? Outside of your life stage or your work or your relationship status. And obviously people have engaged in this kind of experiences since the dawn of civilization or humankind even. So, you know, going, listening to music together, you know, visual arts, there's a lot of different things that can happen here. But that's a way to bond with somebody that's sort of more basic and intuitive, and it's not about checking things off regarding your life roles.
Yeah, interesting. We heard from Vanessa, who said that, "I'm a knitter. I think nearly all of my adult friends I've met at knitting shops or through people who knit. Knitters are thick as thieves." So, I mean, that if you can't play an instrument,
right,
you know, there's still another shared experience.
Yeah, it can be nonsense. It's just if it's intrinsically enjoyable and interesting to you. Mm-hmm. That's all it matters.
And then I think that, like, not being necessarily, like, having something in your life where you don't have to be good at it and it doesn't have to be linked to, like, what you do in your regular life. So, like, being a musician or joining a chorus and really not worrying about achieving the highest level of everything, which you might do in other parts of your life, is such a rewarding experience in general.
All right, we're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about making friends as adults. Julia Furlan is here. She's the host of the NPR Life Kit podcast, How to Make Friends. And Zlatan Krishan is professor of psychology at Iowa State University. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about how to make friends as adults, something a lot of people struggle with. And with me, Zlatan Krishan, professor of psychology at Iowa State University, Julia Furlan, the host of the NPR Life Kit podcast, How to Make Friends. You're welcome to join our conversation as well. You can call 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we have several people commenting on how it does become harder as they age to make friends. Pat says, "I think it gets harder to make new friends as you get older. I moved from out of state to be closer to kids and grandkids. It requires a lot of energy to make new friends, and you need to be proactive to do it. Sometimes it just takes more energy than I'm willing to put out there. There are lots of ways to make friends if you really want to and are willing to extend the time and energy. There are all kinds of senior activities you could get involved in, politics, volunteering, any number of community service type things. I think it just takes a lot of energy, and sometimes it's easier and more comfortable to find a good movie or grab a book." And I mean, Julia, you did find that it takes work. You have to commit yourself. If you want friends, you need to put yourself out there, right?
I mean, it's so true. And honestly, like, you know, if you want to read your book or binge watch a new series, that is your business. That's fine. If you know, not everybody needs to have 10 quadrillion billion friends. And if you don't feel like making friends and it's not bothering you, great, that's fine. But if you do want to make friends, yeah, you have to put in the work. There were lots of people that we spoke to that we heard from listeners. We did like a call out similar to what you guys are doing. And people basically said that there was one woman who had a spreadsheet where she sort of like winnowed down her friends to these like top 25 people. And she like plotted them over time to make sure that she was like putting in the right amount of effort with each of them. So if she didn't see somebody for like, you know, a couple weeks or didn't check in with them, she would have that in her little friendship spreadsheet, which I thought was extra, like extremely extra.
Right.
Like, you know, not everybody needs to do that.
Some of us are.
Yeah, exactly. But I thought, you know, it being really earnest about how hard it is and like sort of taking that on and saying like, yep, I'm going to do this. I'm going to like really try and do that. I think that we would all benefit from some simple honesty about that, both with ourselves and also with each other.
It's important, I think, to also to look at the kind of the nature of this effort. So maybe I'll question that a little bit. So yeah. I think that there's no doubt that there's a lot of these things you need to do, right, if you're going to kind of set a fertile ground to develop these relationships. But the way often we think about this effort, it's kind of like trying to listen to a song, right? What does that mean? You know, you can kind of, you can open yourself up, but it's not clear where that effort is going. So certainly effort is required to schedule things and go places, etc. But perhaps if it turns into, you know, kind of actuarial exercise and bean counting, even if obviously very well-intentioned with yes. the goal of maintaining relationships, you know, something gets lost, that spontaneity. And I think the nature of those relationships has to be affected in some way too. So the way perhaps it's more useful to think about effort that needs to be invested is, you know, invest effort to go do things you like where maybe some other people that like that too, right? Or invest effort into doing those kinds of things rather than this kind of a more effort of right. now I've got to build this friend up and build this friend up and build, because it has to take away some of the magic, right?
Absolutely. Let's go to the phones. Tom is on the line in Butler County. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your experience?
Well, I've always lived in major cities. I moved to Butler County to a farm 2 years ago. I'm 68 years old. I am gay. I am married. And I live near a tiny town. And it's just hard to make friends when most people my age have children and grandchildren, and maybe they don't go out as much because of their families. But I have in-laws here, but that's it. And I found it really, really hard in the last 2 years to make any friends at all.
Oh, that sounds incredibly challenging, Tom. And of course, you're living in a rural area, so there just aren't as many people there. Do you find yourself turning to social media and other ways to keep in contact with people who may be far away?
Yes, I do use social media that way. But, you know, unfortunately, face-to-face and doing things, about the only thing to do is go to a bar. And that's not really how I want to spend my whole life. But that's, you know, in the evenings in a tiny little town, there's not much going on. And I don't go to church. You know, it's just not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, thank you so much for sharing your experience. I'm sure that resonates with a lot of people. I mean, Zlatan, that's a pretty Iowa and Midwestern problem. And of course, we see a lot of people moving into cities, partially because of that social pressure.
Yeah, I mean, move to the cities has been going on for decades and continues to happen. You see the same things with islands in a lot of places. It's too bad, but obviously in the caller's case, there's a lot of constraints that are just sort of out of your control, and unless you're willing to travel somewhere else or willing to organize a new type of activity in your own town, there's not many options.
Right. I want to go to Donna in Iowa City. Hi, Donna.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to share?
Hello. Well, I have a solution for some people. It may not be for everyone, but I live in Prairie Hill Co-Housing. It's a community that's built around the shared value of environmental responsibility. And we've built homes, small, close homes, some of them in duplexes or fourplexes. And we have community meals once a week. We have field trips. But I can sit on my front porch in the evening and two or three people come by and sit down and visit for a while. And I can be down in the common house. We have a common house where we have the community meals. And I'll be doing a puzzle down there, and somebody will come by and say, oh, I'm going to the movie tonight. You want to come? And these people, who I've only known for about 2 years, have become my closest friends as a result because of proximity, certainly. And in fact, we've had three couples who have come together. One couple that's gotten married already, wow. And two others that live together here as a result of meeting each other around co-housing.
Well, Donna, that is really ticks a lot of those boxes, Julia, that you were talking about. And it may feel extreme to some people, but proximity and getting to see people again and again. And then also that they came together in this community over the shared value of environmental responsibility, they already all had something in common, right?
Right, absolutely. There, that really like rounds out the friendship success rate there. We've got shared values, proximity, consistency, and hopefully, I mean, I feel like what develops there is vulnerability, right? Donna's going to be sharing bits of her life. I mean, I think that is like, you know, off the charts. Very like that's really jumping in with both feet. I think that Tom has a little bit more of a struggle
right.
in front of him. But I would say, Tom, host a book club and see if, I mean, Tom's already part of the queer community. So like I would start there and see if Tom can start hosting a like queer community book club every month or and if it can't be at his place, it could be like maybe at a bookstore. You know, you could or he could do it a virtual book club, you know, where everybody like FaceTimes in.
Let's bring somebody else into the conversation now. Steve Earhart helps older adults make connection. He's the life enrichment coordinator at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. Hello, Steve.
Hello. How is everybody doing this morning?
Great. And Steve, you're going to echo, I think, some of the things that Donna was just saying about co-housing. But as people age, a lot of people can experience a lot of isolation. But when they come together in a retirement community or assisted living, that's a time when a lot of new social connections are made. What do you do to facilitate those connections, Steve?
So one of the first things we do is try to do a complete assessment of what they like, what they dislike, some of the things they've done in the past, some of the things they like to try. And it's kind of a team effort. We have all the staff involved in it, everybody from the beauty operator to the maintenance man to the groundsman to dietary. And so then we get together and we produce a calendar for the month, and we try to concentrate on life enrichment programs. That's something they might want to try. We have like a lot of opportunities for volunteering on our campus. And of course, peer-to-peer support, neighbor-to-neighbor, and nutrition with well-balanced meals is very important. Also, fitness is very important. One of the things we found out that socialization is one of the pillars of aging healthy and keeping your brain well. So we try to emphasize activities that have faith, passion, and purpose, that really having a purpose in life and working with others, such as if you're in the bell choir, you're volunteering there, or if you're in the chorus, instead of just practicing, they may not think they're the best, but at least they're doing a Vesper service or a Sunday worship service. So they're learning all these skills that maybe they didn't know in the past, but they have a purpose to getting together and providing entertainment to other people. And the one was talking about knitting. Well, we have knitting and crocheting. So one of the things the people either do on their own or as a group, we have a prayer shawl ministry. So if somebody is down, our chaplain will take them a prayer shawl. So I think having a purpose in what they're doing, the socialization is really important.
And Steve, of course, a lot of us want to stay in our homes as long as possible. And a lot of people aren't very excited about the idea that they are moving out of the homes they've been in for a long time. When people start to make these connections, do you sometimes have people say to you that, you know, they were lonely when they were living in their home and this has made a real difference for them emotionally?
Right. Yes. A lot of people unfortunately have poor health or life changes or social circles become shrinking. And so when they move to the community, I mean, the first week or two, it takes a while to adjust. But I think just having the meals together and reaching across the table, meeting new friends is really important. And then once a month or so, we have an actual meeting for life enrichment where we meet with the residents, and they're the ones that look at the calendar, things they want to try. Another thing is intergenerational programming. We're fortunate that Iowa Central Community College borders our campus. So we're either over at Iowa Central, like we were yesterday, to one of their plays. They'll be coming over here, some of the students from the history class, next week. So being connected with the community makes you feel part of something special, and I think that really helps to create a good circle of friends.
Steve, thank you so much for your time today. Steve Earhart is the Life Enrichment Coordinator at Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. And of course, Julia, it sounds like we all need a Life Enrichment Coordinator in our lives. That would make everything a lot easier. Before we run out of time, I want to talk to both of you about social anxiety, because I mean, a lot of people really struggle with that. And we've talked about making yourself vulnerable in a friendship. There's the give and take of a friendship to have a real friendship, but you have to make that connection, and asking for a number or, you know, doing that is really hard. So, Julia, any tips that you came up with on that?
I have one small bit of research from Jillian Sandstrom, who's a researcher at the University of Essex and a professor of psychology. She did a research test called the liking gap, which is basically, and she found that essentially people like us more than we think they do. So she like interviewed people before and after talking to people, and also over a longer period of time. And what she found is that like people believe that, you know, that voice in your head when you walk away from somebody where you're like, oh, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe, you know, they must think I'm such a dodo brain or whatever, that in fact, that's not the case. Most of the time, people like us more than we think that they do. So if you have social anxiety, I would say, like, keep that little bit of research in your brain for a second and like, be nice to yourself.
That is reassuring. Zlatan, anything to add on that?
If we're trying to reduce social anxiety, I'm not sure that the show will help. Talking about everything you need to do. And I guess I would just come
but
back.
But at least people know they're not alone.
No, no, I'm half joking, of course.
Right.
But I think it's important again to remember what Julia mentioned, as well as this notion of effort and kind of opening yourself up to others, and not sort of maybe not trying to make friends, but trying to be somewhere and do stuff with other people. And approaching things that way, and then letting things happen.
We had a number of people talk about how they met friends through their children. And from my personal life experience, I've found that having kids almost puts you back in the same situation that you were in as a child, where it is easy to make friends again because you're coming into proximity with people a lot and you see the same people, your children connect and then you connect. One of our listeners, Gail, said, have an unreasonable number of children. You get to meet all of their friends' parents. That's a great tip. But of course, it's also at the same time, it's an easy time to lose connection with our friends who don't have kids.
And that happens, right. Yeah.
That happens a lot. And Julie, I think you heard people express that as other people are entering different life stages, it's hard to maintain those friendships.
Right. And I think that we carry this belief that our friend from preschool needs to be our friend forever and ever. And there is a huge benefit to that sort of long-term friendship. But I would say that as we're, you know, marching around this planet for increasingly longer times, we should be able to, you know, end a friendship or break up with a friend if the relationship is not giving us what we need. And that doesn't mean that you can't come back to someone, you know, years later after one of you had kids and the other one didn't and the relationship sort of like petered out and then came back. That's possible. But I do think that being a little bit more gentle on ourselves about how long we have to, like, you know, having to be a friend, having to sort of like, oh, I have to call this person a certain number of times because, you know, they were my friend in preschool, but we have nothing in common anymore. I feel like we should sort of reframe that idea. Although, of course, it is important to be a good person and be a good friend.
All right. Well, I think we need to do a whole other hour about how to invest in friendships and maintain friendships and be a great friend. But we all learned a lot this hour. Zlatan Krijan, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Zlatan Krijan, professor of psychology at Iowa State University. Julia Furlan, thank you.
Oh, I had a great time. Thank you so much.
Julia Furlan is the host of the NPR Life Kit podcast, How to Make Friends. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Dennis Reese, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Charity Nebbe. Well,